I was part of an organization, a religious church, which became a cult, and I left. I had no way to move forward, even though making six figures, principal of the year, teacher of the year, my mental health was not well. If I wouldn't have left, I wouldn't be able to rewrite my journey. My experiences as a young child, working with children that were in the same space I could identify with and help them. Because I know exactly when a child comes to school, they don't have anything to eat or a house. I already know what's going on.
The thing that I think is so powerful about your story is when you were making this huge impact, it was because of your own journey and experiences, but you hadn't started to analyze trauma yet at that point.
I don't care what profession you are in. If you're not sound in your behavioral health and your mental health, you can't do anything else. It's impossible.
Everybody, welcome back to Success Rewritten. I'm your host, Emily Lomenzo-Washkovic. And today I have a very special conversation with Dr. Ricardo Anderson. We were connected through the WISE organization, which is working to end stigma together one story at a time. And I'm so excited to dig into not only his story, but also just his journey and the work he's done in the mental health space. So Dr. Ricardo, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, and I'm grateful to be here, and I'm glad that you had this platform for everyone to share their story of Success Rewritten. Awesome, awesome platform. Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to dig in today. Before we kind of get into all the nitty gritty, why don't you tell everyone a little about yourself, kind of your background and how you got to where we are today?
All right. So a little background for me. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm born and raised in a medium family, the youngest of five. And from that point, just, you know, grew up just a household that was kind of tumultuous, but at times it had some mellow parts. And growing through the time, found my mother passed away by age 12. And so that was very traumatic for me. And however, she gave me some really vivid instructions on what to do after age 12. She said, go to school, find God, and take care of your brothers and sisters, go as far as you can. So with that being said, I kept that in the back of my mind, going through my childhood. And from that point, I kept moving forward, living with my dad after she passed. And that was not the best. It's like jumping from the fire to the frying pan and just left there homeless, walking through the streets of Milwaukee. From that point, moved with my sister. And I was 14, lived with her, forced myself out of high school at age 16, signed myself into college at age 16 in Marquette. And from that point, I was able to start my adulthood early because of my situation as a child. I had some built up anger from the adults that were around me that did not do what they supposed to have done for me as a child. And so I isolated myself, but I was never addressed my trauma or my issues with mental health and recovery because, you know, as a black male, you're told you cannot show that you had any issues or vulnerability at the time. So I stuffed it until like age 34. But in between that time, I did get married, had a child. I was part of an organization, a religious church, which became a cult. And from that point, I ran and separated from that cult at age 32. Very traumatic at that time. At age 32, I was at the height of my career. And I left. Just took everything. Just stopped. I stopped it and just left and moved. And that's where I became and started addressing my mental health challenges at that point too seriously, because I had no way to move forward, even though making six figures, principal of the year, teacher of the year, but my mental health was not well. I was not doing well. So that's how I got to where I am now. I'm at 51. So from age 32 to 51, I've been on a journey of maintaining my recovery. So just a little backstory.
Just a little backstory. That is such just a wild journey from where you started out. You know, obviously circumstances are not in our control when we're young, but how that just influenced the entire course of your life. And I'm so glad that you're doing well and in the place you are now, but there are so many things that you went through to get there. Let's talk a little bit about those younger early days. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know what that might be like, something I've learned about people that are living and unhoused is how easy it can happen, and also the variety of circumstances that can cause someone to be homeless. If you don't mind digging into that a little bit more, can you just talk about what that period was like and share a little bit so people understand, you know, the struggles and kind of how that happens and how challenging it is to really get out of that situation?
Okay. So after my mother passed, we were living just, you know, there's five of us in the house. My mother passed when I was 11. And so from that point, I was shifted to my dad's house. And my dad was not the best individual as a parent. He was a young parent, too. He was, when I was born, he was 17. So he didn't know too much. So I have to err on the side that, you know, he was a child, too. So he could not know, give me what he didn't have. So from that point, he was able to try to force me to be in a street life, thug life. And I said, no, I just said, no, I would not sell drugs. I would not do anything that's outside of being healthy. So I ran from it. So he wound up getting incarcerated, and it was a five of us in the household. And so when he left, he was living with his girlfriend. It was five boys. And from that point, we were not getting along because, you know, I was so-called the outsider because I moved in from my mother's house. And so I was treated like the really tumultuous, just bad environment, a lot of arguing, bickering, just things that were not healthy for me. And so I just left. One day I just left. I had a garbage bag walking down the street of the Milwaukee with a black garbage bag in the wintertime. I was 13. I didn't know where I was going. I just had to leave and get out of that situation. And walking down unhoused, Milwaukee is treacherous in the early, late 80s at the time. And so my aunt picked me up from the street. She said, Ricardo, where are you going? I said, I don't know. So she took me to my grandmother's house, which is her mother, which is my father's mother, because he was, you know, incarcerated. So I was living with her. And so that was my first year of high school. And so she let me stay there for a year and told me I had to leave because she couldn't get a check or any kind of welfare check or a food stamp. So I was no good to her. So I was shipped to my sister's house after my first year of high school. So my sophomore year, live with my sister. And that wasn't any better. You know, at the time I was there with my two nephews and my older brother. Living together. And from that point, we were just in this one two-bedroom home. I'm on the couch. Didn't have a place of my own. I was just grateful to have a place. So I lived there, was in high school, and then lived there for a couple years before I signed myself up for college. And I forced myself out of the situation. That's how I got to where I am. And then I was able to get my driver's license, you know, the junior and junior achievement at the time. So I got the extra credits to get out of high school early, but it helped me to, like, I had to force myself to get out of that traumatic situation so I could move on. I was a young college student. Everything was brand new. So I didn't know anything about college life and being an adult. So I was adulting at 16, trying to rather.
Which is just insane. I mean, even thinking about how young you were when you were walking the streets, figuring out what to do. There's some parents who don't leave their kids home alone at that age. Like, they feel like they need to have someone with them. So I just think sometimes it's really hard for people who come from privilege or a completely different upbringing to understand the responsibility sometimes that's thrust on kids so young. And I'm glad you were able to use education to kind of help yourself. But that's also a really hard and challenging thing to think about, a 16 or 17-year-old being in that college environment. What were those years like? Were you able to get housing? Were you still kind of bopping around while you were going to school? What did that transition look like?
So I was able to get into the dorm, which was great. So I had a vehicle, too. I got a vehicle. I'll save my money up I was working two jobs, working at the Boys and Girls Club and Pick and Save. At the time, it was called Pick and Save. And I was able to get me a small, cheap vehicle for $350 back then. That's a lot of money. But I got that, got my driver's license. And from that point, I was able to live in a dorm. So my first year, I lived in a dorm on campus, which was great. In my little one bedroom by myself. And I was like, yes, I loved it. And just, I was learning how to pay bills, be independent, how to budget my money. And, you know, just being around other adults that had similar mindsets, which was really powerful. I struggled academically in the beginning because I thought, you know, I was, you know, I graduated at 16. Grades were good, but at Marquette was like advanced. So I thought I'm smart. I'm smart getting to Marquette. But the level of like not knowing as far as like English, like grammatical stuff and just the level of expertise I need to have to get there, I struggled my first 2 years of Marquette. And I can say it was a big jump from that and learning that high school reading to prepare me for that area. But I went to, you know, different tutors. I stay after we had study groups at Marquette that helped us. So I found all the resources I could that I needed help in to be successful. Join student organizations, Black Student Council. We had things like that. And we had EOP, the Educational Opportunity Program with health, or the other one was called FFP, which I was Freshman Frontiers Program I was part of. So it was like those areas help you learn study skills, budgeting skills, things like that. So I always try to be resourceful, find resources for myself to be successful in that area because I didn't have it. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to expect. But I love the atmosphere. I can say it was the best part of growing up, of learning how to become an adult through college. So
that is so incredible. I feel like, I mean, as someone that went through like the regular high school system and then went to college, I had that same experience too, where it was like in high school, I was, you know, smart. I was in these advanced classes. And then I got to college and I was like, damn, I'm really bad at math. Like I used to think I was good at it. And then I was like, this is not for me, you know? So I cannot even imagine the position that you were in, which was an advanced track through high school, which honestly compared to what the college experience is like, is so easy to like check off. And to get into Marquette, I mean, Marquette is an amazing institution, but they're also looking at wanting to have a wide range of student types. And then you have to be the one to get yourself up to par. I mean, you had to do so much work accessing resources and getting these things activated to help you. You know, I am always shocked by how hard the systems are to navigate when you need resources or support. Do you remember as a young kid, like what that journey was like trying to tap into those things? Did you have like a social worker that was really helpful, or you just kind of researched everything and figured it out?
I researched everything and figured it out, honestly. And I can say just filling the financial aid paperwork was a challenge. I had one counselor that tried to assist me in high school. And from that point, they showed me a little bit. And from that point, I ran with it. So I always was, they showed me a little bit and I was able to take that and apply it to everything that they showed me back in high school. So I used that while I was in college to apply for financial aid, regular basis, get the financial aid checks and, you know, for housing and the dormitory, able to reapply each year for that. And also, you know, picking my major on how I can get the grants paid for, the money paid for. So I pick education on purpose so I can get the money paid for through the Pell Grant and stuff like that. So I was able to just duplicate the stuff that I saw people help me with, and just it just worked out just fine. And working with the people around the same age range with the adults that were there, we all were doing the same thing at the same time. So it was like I was going with the group. So we all would go together. So it was like it wasn't just by myself, but we all were doing the same thing, learning at the same time too. So it was good to have that supportive, you know, environment with the people there.
That's amazing. And you know, I'm not the person anymore to be like, you need to go to college. I mean, when I was growing up, that was like, I mean, that's what you did if you were going to get like a big kid job. I wouldn't say everyone needs to do that now, but I do think you bring up a good point about one of the major benefits of going to an institution after high school, which is that communal element, right? Finding people that you relate to and also like following a herd a little bit on how to do life, right? Okay, I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, life as a young Black man in Milwaukee and being young and on a college campus and just the identity that you assume based on how you look and what that journey was like when you were so young trying to figure this out and how that maybe impacted the things that you were doing or pursuing or just kind of how you moved through the world.
Okay. So I can say my identity being on college campus started back in high school because when I was trying to graduate at 16 and early to get out, I was in history. I liked history. I didn't know I liked history, which is social studies back then. But my history teacher then gave me a history award for doing so well in history. I've never gotten an award for history or anything besides the Boys Girls Club gave me some stuff. But that kind of prompted me into going to history along with education because history allowed me to know who I am and to seek about being Black in America. So I started doing historical work and learning about myself. So I got a history is one of my majors in Marquette. And it's funny that you say that because the history major I had, the teacher, instructor, I say Dr. Zepko, I remember him. He was very instrumental in like pushing me because I learned not only Black history, but just history around the world. It was just, we had to know just the seven continents, all this stuff. We had to go on historical digs and things like that. So it was very involving. So it was a real rounded for me. And so just a long story short, that professor wife was working in the school when I started my educational career as a teacher. So the wife was working with me on one hand. And when I was finishing and graduating, the husband was working with me to get my degree. And I didn't even know their last name was Zepko. I didn't know that they were married. She said, Ricardo, she said, are you working with my husband? I said, what do you mean? She said, you are in his history class. And I was a senior. I was like, I didn't know. He said, he talk about you all the time because you wanted to star people in history. He said, thinking once you go to get your master's in history. I said, I don't know. I don't know about that. But it was one of those things that I didn't know how connected people were in Milwaukee like that, that I'll be having, she'll be the teacher I work under, getting my teacher's certification, and he'll be my history professor at the school I was at. So it was amazing.
Well, and building those relationships is so powerful. And Milwaukee is one of those places where like, it's so small in many ways, like in terms of people, you know, and overlap. And it just like continues to always amaze me how small it really is. So I love that. I love that journey that you were going through and all the connectivity of the people you were starting to build around you. Let's talk a little bit about your journey to get that continued education because you have multiple degrees and that was a big part of your life for many years. What do you think was driving that? And just kind of talk about that journey that you went on to get multiple degrees.
So thank you for asking that question because I always want to know, say that I didn't want to be stuck. So I purposely, intentionally got multiple degrees. I didn't want to be stuck in no type of career or field because, you know, I knew I wanted to be in a helping field, but I knew I wanted to be a teacher and instructor. And in the beginning, I love, you know, opening minds up and just the possibilities of like learning and growing. So that was always a part of who I wanted to be, who I am. And so with that, you know, finishing with my bachelor's degree. And then a couple years later, I worked at the Boys Girls Club to get my master's. And so I was giving back because I was there when I was six. So it was always continuous in my journey. And so moving forward with that, getting my master's, my first master's degree in human services. And so that was like opening up for the Boys and Girls Clubs, nonprofits, things like that. And so I was able to get that a degree, but it had another element on that side was behavioral health. So I had a choice between human service or behavioral health or being a counselor. I said, no, I want to do that right now. I don't think that's what I want to do. And with that, I was looking at the human service, you know, degree. And so that was my master's. And at the time I was, you know, I got married, age 23. And it was the same group I was with at the time when I was graduating from high school, from college, that it was a part of a cult. And that's where everything became very, very challenging. But at the same time, I want to feel a part of the group. And so want to feel a part and want to be accepted, you know, I just went with the flow. And so with that being said, you know, the group didn't want me to go further in education. They wanted me to stay like in this box. And I was like, no, I was always the one that they had so-called watch, or I was always a lookout because I never followed the rules according to what they wanted. So from that point, I can say I knew I wanted to. I didn't know I wanted to get an advanced degree until my professor in college, my master's degree, Dr. Braden, he said, Ricardo, I think you should go further. I never thought of going further. And he's still in my life today, to this day, Dr. Braden, Warren Braden. He said, I think you should go. I think you're a good candidate to get your PhD. I said, what? What do you mean? And at the same time, I was working at, you know, at the school system as a teacher, and then a principal said, I think you should be a good principal. I'm thinking, what are you talking about? It wasn't even in my mind. So these two people on different avenues saying, I think you'd be good for this. And I never thought that I would be in those realms. And I'm married the same. So all these three things going at the same time. So it's like three different areas. So I said, let me just, you know, see what happened. Let me apply. I applied and I got denied the first time. They said, you're too young. I was only 26, 27. They said, you're too young to be in a PhD program. So they said, you're too young. You don't have enough experience. But at that time, I already had a nonprofit under my belt, working as a teacher and as a teacher lead. And I was on many things in administration for, you know, in the school system. At the time, I wasn't even an assistant principal yet. So they said, you're too young. And Dr. Braden said, you know, reapply again. So Cardinal Stritch. Cardinal Stritch is closed now, but Cardinal Stritch then. So I reapplied the second year, age 28, and I got accepted the second year. And so I was really good that, you know, by the nonprofit, I was able to get the first 2 years paid for starting off. So I got $40,000 paid for because, you know, the nonprofit I was working with was under Cardinal Stritch's like grants. And so I was able to get the first 2 years of my PhD paid for. So I was able to go right through and start without paying anything until the last year.
That's incredible. But that's another prime example of the work that you were being called to do being like the right area and realm for you to continue your education. And I know sometimes that presents challenges, right? Like, you have to do, it's not like anything is free money, right? I mean, there's certain things that you have to do or like systems you have to work within. But I do think it's a good message for anyone listening who maybe doesn't know where to start. And it's like, you know, there are these methods and ways where you can continue your education or work within the nonprofit sector. And that can cover some of those expenses or get you some of that funding to cover or maybe like help fill in some of the financial gaps. So I love that you're kind of sharing how you used those resources to continue forward. Now, remind me, you were teaching while you were in the cult.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this period of time teaching. So when you started in the classroom, how old were you at that point? What was that transition period like?
I was 23 and I was in a program called Milwaukee Teacher Education Center. It was MTEC. So it was like an internship teacher program that you work for a year and then you get your certification afterward. And so I was in an internship at the school. Oh, 12th and Lloyd Street Elementary School. I know they're still there. And that program allowed me to learn how to reach all types of children and challenge my, you know, my area of expertise of being, you know, growing up and, you know, in the urban area. So with that being said, my experiences as a young child, actually working with children that were in the same space, I could identify with and help them. Cause I know exactly when a child comes to school, they don't have anything to eat or a house. I already know what's going on. So they have to tell me. So I just automatically just jump in. It's like, you know, I know what you need. So with that being said, I was able to rise and just know the kids that we're working with and be able to provide support with those teachers and administrators about, you know, how to address these certain issues. So this year, a good candidate for this. I didn't know. I was just doing what I was doing what was the normal thing to do to help someone, not trying to get an award, not trying to just doing what think I want somebody to do for me. If I was in that same situation.
Well, and the thing that I think is so powerful about your story is, in the beginning, when you were making this huge impact and helping, it was because of your own journey and experiences, but you hadn't started to analyze trauma yet at that point. Like, you hadn't even put language around these hard things that you went through as a kid. So you were just having that empathy and also that awareness through your own lived experience and showing up every day. I mean, I can't even wrap my head around, I'm sure, all of the kids that you touched because of that awareness that you had through your own experience. Do you remember when the shift started to happen where you actually looked at your childhood as the trauma and like starting point for some of these mental health challenges that you later were able to identify?
Yes. So I had one student I remember, and I still talk to the student to this day. He's 40. Tronny, small. He's really instrumental because he's the oldest of five. He lost his mom when he was in middle school, when I was his teacher or step teacher, because I taught stepping classes, like dance too. So I taught stepping classes when I was a teacher there. And so he's one of the steppers, and he lost his mom in middle school. And so from that point, I saw how he struggled as a teenager to take care of his five siblings and going through IEPs, education plan for his other brother, going from house to house, things like that. And from that, it kind of like jarred me, like, okay, why am I having this, you know, this knee-jerk, you know, passion? Because I've been through some of the stuff they've been through. And so,
I mean, that story is like,
yeah,
your story on a mirror.
Yes, yes. And we keep in contact. We've talked every week to this day since then. And so I've been on his journey with him and our journeys together. And so he said, since 9 years old, he's 40 now. And so he's like, Ricardo, you've been on with me since I was 9. And I just thought, I said, I didn't know. I never knew that until he just said, put it into perspective. And so with that being said, as the time went on, as I was in my PhD program, at the end of my program, that's when all the traumas kind of came back to me and why I need to start addressing, because I went as far as I could go in education. You know, education was my safety net, was my safe space. And I have not addressed any traumatic events from childhood and adulthood and being a cult. It's never been, it's like I just pushed it down and kept going, kept it moving. And it's like, nope, you got to address it or you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to move forward. So I had to do some digging, and I was able to just quit. I quit my six-figure job. I quit being a principal. I quit and just, you know, just stopped and moved to a whole other place and regroup.
I mean, I think about that sometimes. Like, if my life ever blows up, I'm just going to move. I'm just going to move to some place where no one knows me. But I mean, really, you had to. You were at this stage where you were forced into this next chapter. And what the next chapter looked like, you took control of. But you were at this emotional crossroads that had kind of been under the surface for so long. But it got to this point where it was at the top. As much as you want to share about the cult, how were you able to make that split when you left physically? Were you still having this like emotional disconnection? I mean, community, you separated yourself from your community, which was so important to you. What was that like?
So I was there for 10 years, 12 years, and I was in my early 20s. So I started with them when I was 20 to 32. And so in between getting to the degrees in teaching and then going for my PhD, they were all a part of that, which they said they didn't want me to go any further, but I didn't follow the rules. I didn't follow the rules. So I do. I mean, I didn't follow the rules. So they was like always like trying to look out for me or find out what I'm doing. So just understanding that, you know, being a cult and knowing who God is totally different. And I had to kind of like separate the two because people are not like God. And what I had to think about, like people make judgment calls, but God doesn't. God will help you. And so it took me a minute to get that understanding because I was trying to equate the two. It's like that on this stuff is not right. So I finally left. It was my last year at the school I was principalship at. And I just left. I put the church keys on my ex-wife's house. I got divorced at the same time. My youngest son, he's 26. He'll be 25 this July. He's still there, but in the mix at this point, as we talk, as we speaking. And so not too much communication here and there, but at the same time, I had to put in perspective. If I wouldn't have left, I wouldn't have been where I wouldn't be able to rewrite my journey right now. And to hold that, get the reins of what my emotional, my mental health, behavioral health was not in line because I also have a hearing challenge. I have a hearing loss in my right ear. So I never addressed that when I was, you know, younger, and I started talking about it because people were like, well, how did you navigate that from age 9 to now? I said, I never talked about it. And it was like, it was frowned upon when you had a hearing challenge. They like, you know, you're something wrong with you. And so I never addressed it till like age 45. And so WISE was part of when we first started to address my hearing challenge. And so that's where I was able to say, well, I'm co-occurring. So I have mental health and co-occurring with physical health, which is my hearing challenge. So it was a co-occurring with substance use, but co-occurring as physical impairment. So they were like, well, that makes sense. And how'd you adapt? I was able to adapt by, you know, when I come into classrooms, I will sit on the left-hand side, not the right-hand side. I would sit close to the door. So it was like I just automatically did it with no one knowing that I had, you know, hearing loss in my right ear, 85% hearing loss. And so it was, you know, an incident where, you know, another child hit me in the ear and my eardrum, you know, burst. And so I had to have surgery when I was 10. I had surgery again at 17 or 18 when I was in college because it went towards my brain and I had to get the abscess or the pus from my brain. And so with that being said, I was in college when that happened too. So it was like in the middle of that. So I never addressed any of those traumatic events until after I left, it started flooding back. And so I had to go back from beginning to right now. And so it was just, you know, amazing that I was able to really capture what happened to me and how to process it and put it into perspective right now. So I never talked about it to WISE. WISE was what actually helped me to start talking about my hearing loss.
Ricardo, you have gone through so many things and so many of them alone, like, you know, just navigating it yourself. And I'm sure that people listening have felt that loneliness before, whether they truly are or, you know, the people around them, it doesn't feel like they can talk to them or share. And so I'm so grateful that you're sharing because I know it inspires people and also makes them realize that they are not alone in feeling alone. Like, I think that's a very normal experience when you're going on this journey. I want to talk about WISE, but before we do that, can we just cover a little bit of when you were in the education system and a teacher and then also as a principal, that was a time when even though you didn't have the language or really talk about trauma, it wasn't talked about by anyone. I mean, no one was talking about mental health at the time in the space. Can we just cover that a little bit?
So going back to, you know, as a teacher and a principal, that even when working with the social workers in the school system, and then it was mainly talked about like those children that were at risk, so-called at risk, and the families. So that's when it came up. But it was frowned upon as, you know, like they need help because they have all these struggles. Yes, that's true. However, you have to go back to the atmosphere you create for a safe space. And a lot of kids and families did not feel they were safe to talk about that in school around people because, you know, DCFS has to come and take your kids for certain things. And like, especially disproportionately race of, you know, black and brown students were taken more so than our white counterparts. So basically the same time, you had to be able to actually try to have a balance with that, because as a teacher and administrator, I couldn't talk about my mental health challenges to my colleagues or any teachers because, you know, your teaching abilities would be questioned, your leadership skills would be questioned because you're having mental health challenges. So I had to stuff that down. Like, I may not feel what to do. I couldn't show it. I couldn't tell anybody. I couldn't share it. So with that being said, you know, was challenging because a lot of days I did not feel like being at work. I didn't want to be there. My life was tumultuous behind the scenes with me in that cult on top of that. So I couldn't tell anybody, but you know, I had a few friends that I talked to after I came out the cult that were in the school system. They said, Ricardo, I'm glad that you're out of it. You know, I have like four friends. Dr. Brain was one of them from my master's degree. Miss Mary Coleman, she passed away 2 years ago. Vanessa Lederbach, she's one of the teachers that I talked to. But it's like four people I talked to, and they said they walked me through all the parts while I was transitioning from a teacher to principal to adjunct instructor to get my PhD to obtain that. And then being through the cult, and also Tronie, my student, was there when it was going through the cult. He was in the mix when I was going through the same stuff. So four people were in all of my transitions from going from my teaching to leadership to adjunct to PhD. All these people were in that same transition when I got to be here now and still are part of my life at this point, which they never changed. They never changed. Yes.
Yeah, you built that. I mean, you built that community, that system of support that you needed. And, you know, some people are born with that, their family or whatever the system is, that structure that holds them. And I'm so glad that you found your people and got out of the unhealthy cult life and were able to get, you know, free of that. So I think what I want to talk about next is this period where you kind of quit everything and moved and were trying to recenter yourself. What did that look like? How were you feeling? Do you remember that period? And in hindsight, is it like it was quick? It was long? What was that part of the journey like?
So I can just want to give credit is due to Marisa Brown. She's a woman that I'm with now. She was a person that told me that I was asking questions about. So she said, Ricardo, you're not... They call us crazy. I said, you're not crazy. You're not off. You're not seeing things. You're not hearing things. You see what you see. You know what you know. So Marisha was able to validate the feelings I was feeling because I thought it was something wrong with me about how I was feeling, how I was being treated. And so that was my beginning journey of like digging into, you know, my traumatic events. So her and I have been talking from that point when I left. And so when I left, I was able to process from age 4 to now. And it has been a journey. It's stuff I didn't remember until a dream came to me back when I first left that I stuffed down at age 4. What happened to me, which, you know, is very traumatic, but at the same time, I never remembered it until I got out and removed from that situation. And so just going through like things like that and just be able to bounce ideas and experiences like, did this really happen? She's like, yes, it did. Because you would remember. I said, I didn't remember that. And so, and then reflected on My mother told me to, you know, I remember my mother said also, she said, find God. She said, take care of your brothers and sisters and go as far as education. So I believe I honored her in all those areas. My mother had the smallest, she had the most quality time with me. Only had 11 years with my mom. My brothers and sisters had at least 20 or 30 years with my mom. I had the smallest time. So after leaving, I was able to process Marisa a lot of things from my childhood to this point as I am now. And I can say that it's been a long process, age 32 to now, still processing and making connections on what happened to me, how, you know, why I act the way I am and how I, you know, process certain things in a way that, you know, it's okay. It's okay that, you know, I can say my diagnosis, anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm okay saying that. Back then, no, I would never have like said, you know what? I'm not, you know, there's nothing wrong. I'm fine. But now it's okay because I'm able to provide hope for others that may have that same type of like questioning. Is this right? Am I feeling the way I'm feeling? My emotion all over the place where I feel like I'm not doing well today. It's okay. And, you know, that space has been very, very powerful and hopeful for me because I'm able to, you know, show others or provide people with those strategies and tools to do this and this and this. So that's why, you know, it's very powerful that I was able to leave and process with someone that was grounded in a way that can say, that can validate my feelings, validate my thoughts and my emotions and say, you know, Ricardo, you saw what you saw and you know what you know, and this is what happened. And like, okay, thank you for giving me that validation because people have you in a circle that know it happened. It did happen. And, you know, this is what happened to you. And they will tell you that, no, it didn't. Like, no, I was there. Don't play with me. And so with that being said, I'm just grateful that I have, you know, that one person that was there when I transitioned out of it that was able to take me to the next step to start processing my traumatic events. I was able to make sense of how I fit, where things move in line, and how I was able to just regain my, you know, my strength to start my new journey because I thought I was going to be a superintendent, which I didn't want to be. But that was my trajectory as a teacher to become a principal, then superintendency. But I don't want to do that. So my second master's was in, of course, education leadership. Of course, I had to get that and be a principal. But my first master's is where I'm really, really learning how to really hone into like behavioral health and being a mental health recovery support specialist. I'm, you know, able to broaden my skills on all the aspects I've been around. So it's been very, very, it's been a blessing. And it's been a blessing to be a part of this because, you know, WISE was like my springboard 5 years ago when I joined WISE 5 years ago. Is my springboard through Troni, because my student was a part of WISE and still is. And he's like, Ricardo, I think you should speak. So that helped me give me like the motivation to start the process. Also, I'm going to back up a little bit. Just at that time, I did was able to be in a publication with 25 other people to tell our story, just a part of our story. It was called 26 Men, Unsung Men. A guy from Canada outreached me and said, I think you have a powerful story. And I'll start that journey of telling parts of my story, gave me the unction to move forward. And that was 10 years ago, along with my journey of coming out the cult. So I can say, you know, I give, you know, him some credit to, you know, believing in me for telling my story about, you know, rewriting my journey. And it's okay to be okay, to be not okay. And just tell it from a male perspective that, you know, I did have all the tools. It's like my aha moment. When they come to you, like, aha, how is that? It's okay now to be okay. And it's okay to talk about it. And it's okay to have someone and to find someone that you trust to tell those things to in a safe space. So,
yeah. Well, something that you said that really stuck with me there is this whole element of when you have trauma or traumatic things that happen, people sometimes tell you they didn't, or they try to minimize, or they try to say, well, it happened because of this. And so you should, you know, deal with it this way. And all of those things are kind of wrapped up in generational trauma, especially, right? So when we're talking about young kids being around things that are traumatic or all of those types of foundational things that happen to you, the follow-up on those when you get older is often trying to invalidate your experience because they were invalidated, or the cycle that they're seeing it from is what tries to take that version away from you. And so I just want to call that out because so many people, I think, experience that, like whether they identify as having gone through trauma in childhood or not, that dynamic of the people who were around and whether they validate or don't validate your story is very common. And I'm so glad that you were able to find someone who, you know, supported you and helped you not be pulled down by that, because that's got to be so hard as someone who's already doing the very challenging thing of unearthing or remembering stuff that's been pressed down. And then someone's telling you that it's not real. And so I think it's so amazing that you share that you experienced that, and now how you still know that you're right, that all of those things did happen. And I think that's such a valuable message to share with other people. I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about what it's like when you work with people who maybe haven't identified that they themselves have gone through trauma. Because I'm thinking of people who might be listening and they're thinking about maybe going on their own journey of digging into those traumas. How do you often start that conversation, or how do you support people when you share your story and they say, I think I went through something similar?
So how I work with people that may have similar or start their journey for traumatic events, or unpacking that, I would say that I'm validating them for the first part, because, you know, I have worked with individuals that have been through traumatic events on a consistent basis. And the first thing they always ask me or have told me or experienced it, did it really happen? And I just say yes. And so that part, and then what usually happens that I've seen, they start asking family members, and some family members are not honest and some of them are. So that's when I had to think about the family I had to go back to, and some didn't, and they didn't validate me. And I know that it happened. And to this day, I have some family members I talk to, a lot of them I don't. But they know things happen because some stuff happened around them. And so when stuff happened around them, they can't say it didn't happen, because that I was there, you were there, and you know why I'm not around you, because these things happened to me. And so with that being said, they can't say it didn't happen. So they usually don't say anything at all. Because I have, you know, to be honest, I wrote a 15-page letter to my family about what happened to me. And they could not refute anything. What happened, they just was quiet. Before I left Milwaukee, I wrote my family a 15-page letter and dropped off to all the elders in my family and my siblings. Let them know, this is what happened to me. This is why I'm leaving. And, you know, no one tried to help. So I'm angry. I've been angry for a while. So with that being said, when I work with people that's experiencing the same type of, or want to do the digging, I say, you know, it's going to be a roller coaster of emotions you're going to experience. But it's okay, because they're going to come and go at different times. You don't know when it's coming. It's sporadic. So, you know, just brace yourself a little bit, but it's going to be okay. It's something you have to go through, and then you'll be able to process and think clearer when certain things happen or certain emotions, because some things pop in your mind. You, oh, did that really happen? It did happen, because it's not popping up for no reason. And so they get that, you know, that calmness that comes around them. So, okay, I know I can come to Ricardo or process traumatic events in a way that, you know, that's healthy. And I'm okay with experiencing the emotions that come with that. Be able to find that support that can support me in going through these events. So that's been very effective over the last 15 years of being in space. And I want to say, You know, Marisa Brown has been very instrumental. She's my fiance, so I, you know, love her to death. And she has been just one of those people that is rare, a rare jewel that, you know, a person that you can actually, you know, talk to and provide that insight about what happened and then like process. That is just something. You just have one person. There's one person. I have like four other people, but some people I got to go in depth with, and that's the person I go in depth with, like with things that you don't want to say around other people, but I can say those things that I won't say other people. But I love that I can go in depth. Like, this is what actually happened. Like, she's like, okay. She said, thanks for telling me, you know, but let's process. We always say, let's process and reflect. We always say, let's process and reflect. And so we do that together all the time. And so, working with people, like Troy and I are process reflecting things to this day. And so he's like, Ricardo, I said, yes, Tronie, yes. And so, and he's 40, that's what, 31 years ago. Oh my God, it's amazing. It's been 31 years ago since we-
It is.
Yes.
And I think it's amazing how through what you didn't get from all the people who should have been showing up, you now are able to not only have that in your own life, but create that for other people. And I can't even imagine the amount of people he's helped because you helped him. And so it's this like trickle down and this beautiful like ripple effect. You have a lot of experience doing like group dialogues and just having conversations around these topics. Can you just maybe speak to the power of getting together with other people and talking about it? Because I think some people maybe they only think about this stuff on their own, or they've kind of never processed it because they don't know where to process it. What have you seen in terms of the power and value of group dialogue, just conversation in general about trauma and mental health?
So the power and dialogue, we just did something that like last week about the power of sharing your story. And it brings connectedness. It brings just like inclusivity, and you don't feel isolated. And you gotta have you gotta do it in a safe space. You know, some things you can't share to the too much because it can be re-triggering. So you have to be in a way that you can share enough, but not too much detail. And that's what, you know, that's when the expertise, I have lived experience, but the expertise come in sharing in a way that you get your point across, not to the point that you re-triggering somebody else on their trauma. And so I think that's where the space that comes in when you're in groups, you learn how to share and connect without doing too much. Because some people can share the whole, this big, okay, you just told me too much. It's too much information. And it's going to be information overload. But in a space, you can say, you know what? I think you shared too much at this time, and I need to take a step back. And that's a, you know, a good way to say that, you know, but I let the other person know, I think I shared too much. And so that's where the groups come in, and you learn that being in groups around people to let you know that how to have a balance with that, because some people can tear all their stories and it'd be way too much. But now you're in a space, I've learned in a space that you can share just enough to feel that being comfortable and feeling safe. And then you can have, you know, side conversations if you want to with other people. But as a group space, you know, keeping it balanced. It's always about keeping a balance with that.
Absolutely. And there's so much power in hearing other people's stories, but not being re-triggered is also this delicate balance. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. And I think it's good for people to know when you start having these conversations or supporting people in your life, there are going to be maybe uncomfortable moments. And so being able to go through that dialogue, if it's one-to-one, you navigate that a little differently than if it's in a group. But I think that's super helpful framing for people. Let's talk about whys. I mean, your entire story and journey is obvious to me why this organization is such a perfect fit and something that you're very passionate about. But maybe we can share for people a little bit more about the WISE mission and this entire approach to slaying stigma that they have.
So the mission is to eliminate stigma one story at a time. And, you know, what was really powerful about that was that, you know, it's stigma around mental health, behavioral health, substance use, and just co-occurring challenges, and people don't talk about it. And eliminate that stigma one story at a time is about what you're part of. Like, this platform is telling one story at a time because it allows us to reach people that are struggling, are isolated in certain areas and need to be, you know, reached back in. Like, it's okay. Come in and talk to us and just share what you feel comfortable sharing. Don't tell us everything that you don't want to tell us, but just say, if you're comfortable sharing, share. And WISE has been that safe haven for me for the last 5 years. And I was just really intrigued by the mission and vision about that is the heart of WISE, to share your story and to gain some insights on how to share and to get some education or just some collaboration with resources, areas that you may, for your family. I use WISE for my family, you know, the ones that want to, you know, seek help. Even my colleagues work with now, and my colleagues that was in my PhD program, almost 20 years ago. Oh my goodness, I'm getting old. But at the same time, we still were able to reach back and to grab people from the community. Like, I didn't even know WISE existed when I was in the space of a teacher, because it's under Rogers Behavioral Health. I'd heard about Rogers, but this is a whole group of people I don't even know. I didn't know. So it was a whole group of new people, new faces, new atmosphere of people that had different perspective on life and mental health and substance use or co-occurring challenges or behavioral health. So it's been very, very instrumental. You know, I've been on the executive committee for the last 3 years of the chair, and it's been really good. Just, we have a good time. We just talk openly, and we actually just this last past 2 months, we just not sharing our stories with each other, how we got involved. So it's really been like, this, tell me about that call. I was like, you know, we can talk about it. Cause they didn't know until I just revealed it just recently about, they said, what? I said, yes, that's why I'm a part of WISE, because it's able to allow me to talk about it.
Tell you, Ricardo, you didn't tell me about it until this call either. So that's such a good, like, it's such a good thing to reflect on, because you have been telling your story for years, and the story has so many elements and layers. And what you even just shared about how people with lived experience can share, but an expert knows how to share in this way. And so your telling of the cult part of your journey is still getting developed and integrated into how you tell your journey. Because think about that. The cult isn't even like the only thing that, and that's what I feel like we need to give so much credit to you for, is, I mean, you have survived so many things and found ways to turn these experiences into the strength of who you are, but also a light of hope for other people. And I just think that's so amazing. It's so amazing.
Thank you. I'm just honored for you to even, you know, doing this platform. It's like, wow. When I heard about it, I said, wait a minute, success rewritten. That is a powerful statement. Those two words. Yes, we're rewriting our success. And, you know, I thought, you know, I was going to be in the educational field, which, you know, I am in certain ways, but not to the point that I thought, because I'm supposed to be a superintendent by now. I'm like, no, I do not want that. And I know I didn't want that. And it's okay, because some people fit some people. Some people, it wasn't for me. I said, I want to be in a space that I could help people on the front line in a way that, you know, you have to be okay in your mind, in your space first before you can do anything else. I don't care what profession you are in. If you're not sound in your behavioral health and your mental health, you can't do anything else. It's impossible. I don't care what field you're in. So, and you got to admit, you be able to admit and be able to, you know, hone in on that and be able to get support and be able to process. You know, that takes some skill, some time, some honesty.
Well, and what I love about all the rewriting of your success, and I think this is true of many people, is even though you're in a way different place than where you thought you were going initially, all of those places that you spent time were impactful and instrumental in your journey. And so you couldn't have gotten to these different stages without those phases and almost like little junctions along the road, right? And even the way you reflect on who's still in your circle today and when you met them, it's like you needed to have that period as a teacher and as a principal, but absolutely you needed to step away and be honest when that upward trajectory that had been the path you were supposed to follow no longer suited you. And I think some people have that shift, like they get older or their values change. But for you, it was like all of these things that had happened to you then started coming through and you needed to show up differently in the world. And I just think it's an amazing and incredible pivot. And I can't wait to hear all the people who not only respond to your story, but are interested in sharing their own because you inspired them. So I'm so grateful to you. I'm trying to think of like the best closing question. Maybe it's something about like any advice you have for people supporting someone in their life that maybe has gone through something or is struggling. Like, what can we do as support people or friends or safe spaces to show up for people who might be going through a hard time?
I would say the best advice for other people that's supporting people is to know the person supporting and know what works or what is helpful. Because you can have supporters and they can not be the most helpful. And just knowing that person, because the supporters I have, they know some words you cannot say to me when I'm going through something. You cannot say it's going to be okay. You cannot say certain things. So you have to know the person what they don't want to hear, because that's not helpful to them. And that's where it comes to getting connecting with that person, make that honest connection with that person, knowing what is helpful in the moment when they are struggling and what's not helpful. And so that has been one of the things I've been honing in with the people I'm supporting, what they do not want to hear, because it's not being productive. It's not productive saying, you know, calm down, people don't want to hear that sometimes. And I know I wasn't, because I was never a person that always like was amped up. I was always calm. So my emotions always calm. When I'm too calm, they're like, Ricardo is too calm. What's going on? You need to dig it out. And so my emotion went the opposite way. So people that know me know when I'm calm, way too calm, something is brewing. And so,
But I think that's such good advice. And I also just want to like back it up by saying you might make mistakes, right? You might be trying to help and make a mistake. And that's when you notate that down for yourself. This is not something I'm going to use in the future with this person. And sometimes when you're having this dialogue or interaction in an elevated state, you might need to come back to it after and say, hey, you know, I was trying to help. I said or did this. It seemed to not help. It seemed to have the opposite effect. And so sometimes it's hard to be that support person and feel like I'm doing everything wrong. I don't know what to do. And it's okay to make mistakes and then figure out together with that person, how can you help them better next time? So I think that was amazing advice.
And the last thing I will say, you know, what I learned that when I'm in a crisis, I know that what I do, like I actually written my crisis plan when I'm well. So when I'm doing well, I have to write my crisis plan so I know exactly what I look like when I'm well, and you know exactly when I'm not, when I'm doing well. So you can't write a crisis plan when you're in a crisis because you don't know what's going on sometime. But at the same time, you know, using Wellness Recovery Action Plan or RAP has, you know, been instrumental in knowing the different areas when you're struggling and you need support to get back to wellness. But knowing your crisis plan right now when you are well and doing well. I haven't had pictures of what I look like when I'm well, so I know this is what I'm like when I'm well. It's a picture when I'm not well. So with that, when people see those certain pictures or certain my face, they like, okay, maybe struggling, what's going on? But it's like that, you know, knowing when to say things when people are in a crisis. But the person has to know what it looks like for them when they know
what to write about when they're well versus not well, because you can't figure it out. And that's what one, another advice I would say, write your crisis plan when you are doing well.
Absolutely. And just understanding what trauma responses look like can be important too. And I recently did a trauma response training and I learned a ton, but it brings me back to this point you made about, as you started doing that trauma work yourself, understanding why those behaviors were the way they were, or why your emotions go to this certain place. And as someone supporting or going through that, identifying what that looks like for you compared to your own baseline is really valuable. So I think that's super helpful advice. I just want everyone to know that if they want to know more about WISE, they can go to eliminatestigma.org. There's so much stuff on there. People's stories, resources, journeys. Is there anything else that we want to point to or call out, whether it's a WISE resource or any other way that maybe people can connect or get help if they need that we want to mention?
Well, I would say the WISE resource would be just to, like you said, the emilystigma.org is the email, and they have a lot of different resources. The safety decals are there. We have other resources, and we have we are revamping a lot of things we've been doing. We're doing coalitions, but we're revamping those. So we're in a digging up and finding new ground area, which is great, great, great. So if you just want more information, just reach out to that email. So
thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I feel like we covered so much incredible ground, and you sharing your story today and just in general is helping so many people. So thanks for being vulnerable and open with me.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I was able to be of support.
You are incredible.